Bhagavata.
Indriyavrata.
Bhagavata.
Bhagavata.
The great devotee.
The great devotee.
Atma Aramaha.
Atma Aramaha.
Who takes pleasure in self-realization.
Katam.
Why?
Mune.
O great sage.
Grihe.
At home. Aramata.
Enjoyed.
Yat mulaha.
Having which as the root cause.
Karma bandaha. The bondage of fruitive activities. Parabhavaha. The defeat of one's human mission. Translation. King Parikit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, O great sage, why did King Priyavrata, who was a great self-realized devotee of the Lord, remain in household life, which is the root cause of the bondage of karma, fruitive activities, and which defeats the mission of human life? Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the fourth canto, Srila Shukadeva Goswami explains that Narada Muni perfectly instructed King Priyavrata about the mission of human life. The mission of human life is to realize oneself and then gradually to go back home, back to Godhead. Since Narada Muni instructed the king fully on this subject, why did he again enter household life, which is the main cause of material bondage? Maharaj Parikit was greatly astonished that King Priyavrata remained in household life, especially since he was not only a self-realized soul, but also a first-class devotee of the Lord. A devotee actually has no attraction for household life, but surprisingly, King Priyavrata enjoyed household life very much. One may argue, why is it wrong to enjoy household life? The reply is that in household life, one becomes bound by the results of fruitive activities. The essence of household life is sense enjoyment, and as long as one engrosses his mind in working hard for sense enjoyment, one becomes bound by the reactions of fruitive activities. Thus, ignorance of self-realization is the greatest defeat in human life. The human form of life is especially meant for getting out of the bondage of fruitive activities. But as long as one is forgetful of his life's mission and acts like an ordinary animal, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, he must continue his conditioned life of material existence. Such a life is called Svarup Vishmriti, forgetfulness of one's real constitutional position. Therefore, in Vedic civilization, one is trained in the very beginning of life as a brahmachari. A brahmachari must execute austerities and refrain from sex indulgence. Therefore, if one is completely trained in the principles of brahmacharya, he generally does not enter household life. He is then called Naishtika Brahmachari, which indicates total celibacy. King Parikit was thus astonished at the great King Priyavrata, although trained in the principles of Naishtika Brahmacharya, entered household life. The words Bhagavat Atmaramaha are very significant in this verse. If one is self-satisfied, as is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is called Bhagavat Atmaramaha. There are different types of satisfaction. Karmis are satisfied in their fruitive activities. Jnanis are satisfied to merge into the effulgence of Brahman. And devotees are satisfied to engage in the Lord's service. The Lord is self-satisfied because he is fully opulent. And one who is satisfied by serving him is called Bhagavat Atmaramaha. Manushanam Sahasreshu. Out of many thousands of persons, one may endeavor for liberation. And of many thousands of persons attempting to become liberated, one may achieve liberation from the anxieties of material existence and become self-satisfied. Even that satisfaction, however, is not the ultimate satisfaction. The jnanis and karmis have desires, as do the yogis, but devotees have no desires. Satisfaction in the service of the Lord is called akama, freedom from desire, and this is the ultimate satisfaction. Therefore, Maharaj Parikit inquired, how could one who is fully satisfied on the highest platform be satisfied with family life? The word parabhavaha in this verse is very significant. When one is satisfied in family life, he is doomed because he must already have forgotten his relationship with the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj describes how the activities of family life implicate one more and more. Atma, patam, griham, andakupam. Household life is like a dark well. If one falls into this well, his spiritual death is assured. How Priyavrata Maharaj remained a liberated Paramahansa, even within family life, is described in the next verse. Om Agyanati Randasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Prabhupada is asking how could a person properly trained in Vedic principles again fall into the blind well of household life? The answer is, and as will be revealed in the coming chapters, Maharaj Priyavrata was absorbed in the ecstasy of hearing and chanting about Krishna. He was with Narada Muni, and they were just hearing and chanting about the pastimes of Krishna, which is the ultimate destination for pure devotees. But they needed a qualified person to run the universe. So Lord Brahma came down, actually, and said, you have to do it. Lord Brahma was unhappy about it. It was an unhappy assignment. He had to order a person who's fully competent to be renounced and absorbed in ecstasy in hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's a very rare position to achieve in this material world. Someone is actually fully competent to immerse himself totally in hearing and chanting about Krishna. When you achieve that stage, the normal thing is you just stay there. You don't, again, do anything else. But a higher principle is liberating all the other living entities in the universe. In order to do that, there has to be universal arrangement. This is why we find Lord Chaitanya was so pleased with Vasudev Dat. Vasudev Dat was a great devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Has everyone heard of Vasudev Dat? He's just... His devotion was so great that it conquered the Lord's heart. The Lord, as we were talking about yesterday, one day Vasudev Dat came to Lord Chaitanya and said, my heart breaks to see the sufferings of all living entities in this material world. And then Vasudev Dat said, please send them all back to Godhead. Just give them spiritual bodies. Without any sadhana, we have to undergo the rigorous procedures of sadhana bhakti, chanting 16 rounds a day, which is difficult, forcing the mind to hear the Hare Krishna mantra. For a conditioned soul, this is a great austerity. Getting up early every day, so many austerities, going on book decision, worshipping the deities. There's tremendous amounts, and we're going to have to do this our whole life. So, but Vasudev Dat was so full of love and compassion for all living entities, he wanted every living entity, even the rats, the cockroaches, the bacteria, the term used in Anchita chapter 3, text 79 is the stavara and jangama. Stavara, it's close to English. You'll notice that English comes from Sanskrit. So you can actually, stavara means stationary. And jangama means moving. So Vasudev Dat was not only concerned about all human beings, he was concerned about every living entity in the whole universe. So he made this most incredible request of the Lord, please don't even ask them if they want to go back to Godhead, because if you ask them, most of them will say that they're not interested. The devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they blow away all the rules. The normal rules are you have to beg for devotional service and undergo the austerities of sadhana bhakti or the varnashram dharma system and undergo many lifetimes of rigorous discipline to achieve self-realization, what to speak of going back to Goloka Vrindavan. But the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were handing out ecstatic love to the jagais and madais, the murderers, the drug addicts, the lowest scum of the earth. The devotees are so pure-hearted, they're just giving ecstatic love to everybody. So Vasudev Dat, he made this most incredible request, please give them spiritual bodies. In other words, essentially dissolve their subtle body. The subtle body is what chains us to material existence, as we're hearing about in the purport, the desire to enjoy the material energy. Such desires are a function of the subtle body, mind, intelligence, false ego. Lord Kapila says in the third canto, by proper execution of sadhana bhakti, you dissolve the subtle body. Just like if you put sugar, a sugar cube into water, it dissolves entirely. So the Hare Krishna mantra has the power to dissolve our subtle body when chanted offenselessly, or at least in Nama Vas. There are three stages of chanting, Nama Prad, Nama Vas, and Shudhanam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes these in a book called Harinam Chintamani. And within the range of Nama Vas, which is the clearing stage, there are five subdivisions. Our Vaishnava literature is so deep, it's so rich. There are books by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, especially these two, are super analytical. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the book Harinam Chintamani, he describes in great detail about there's five different kinds of Nama Vas. Nama Parad means offensive chanting. It means you're chanting while maintaining material desires. That chanting has no taste and you'll give it up very quickly. So that's not a stable position. Either you accelerate further or you abandon the process of chanting because there's no taste in offensive chanting. In Nama Vas, the lowest form of Nama Vas is to jokingly chant Krishna's name, not recognizing it to be the name of Krishna. So, for example, in Harinam, people may jokingly chant the holy name. But they make tremendous advancement, actually. By that form, Nama Vas, they're getting tremendous advancement. Higher forms of Nama Vas involve actively trying to give up the anartas. Like, hopefully that's what we're trying to do. Is we have material desires residing in the subtle body, in a reservoir, but we don't like them. We're trying to get rid of them. So that's a good stage. You're not meditating on material desires. You're trying to maintain them. But you're actually begging the Lord to take them away. Nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, kavitam va, jagadish, kamaye. So we're actively begging, we're praying to Krishna, please take away. They're called anartas. Arta means that which has value. Anarta means that which is, it's worse than valueless, it's positively detrimental. So this is all analytically described in Harinam Chintamani. The interesting thing about this Harinam Chintamani is it's a conversation. It's written, recorded by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, published by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but it's actually a conversation between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur. There, the Thakur is speaking. Lord Chaitanya is so amazing, he acts like the disciple. In at least two famous conversations, this one in Harinam Chintamani and the other one in Madhula chapter 8 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a conversation between Ram Ananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ram Ananda Roy is none other than Vishakha, one of the two most intimate associates of Sri Radhika. So, Ramananda Roy is actually Vishakha, and he's a humble servant of the Lord, of course, but Lord Chaitanya makes him the speaker. Lord Chaitanya acts like the disciple and asks very wonderful questions. Has everyone read this Madhula chapter 8? It goes all the way from the very basics, Varnashram Dharma, all the way up to Radha Bhava, Gopi Bhava. So it involves the entire, it's deliberately designed. It goes from one step to the next. Because Lord Chaitanya asks Ramananda Roy, what is the goal of life? And Ramananda Roy begins by saying, to properly execute one's duty in Varnashram Dharma. And that's a reasonable answer if you're not a devotee, if you're not deeply absorbed in devotional service. But Lord Chaitanya was not satisfied with that. So he said, please say something higher. So they kept working their way up to Shantaras, Dasiras, Sakya, Vatsalya. As it got more intimate, Lord Chaitanya was happier and happier in the conversation. He was saying, yes, this is very good. Please continue. So also in Harinam Chintamani, Haridas Thakur is made the guru. And of course, the devotee doesn't want to be this guru, but Lord Chaitanya orders them to play this role or Ishvara Puri had to be the spiritual master of God. He knew that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but still, he out of duty, he had to, or Sandipani Muni, spiritual master of Krishna. So Krishna is so much attached to his pure devotees that he says that no one can get love of God without serving a pure devotee. Even I won't get love of God. Even I won't exhibit love of God without being becoming the servant of my devotee. So Lord Chaitanya, he did not exhibit love of God until he took initiation from Ishvara Puri. The point he wants to make is that his pure devotees are worshipable. Even if you happen to be God, you still have to serve a pure devotee. So we find in Chaitanya Bhagavat that Lord Chaitanya would wash Ishvara Puri's clothes, hang them up to dry, then fold them and give them back to Ishvara Puri, just like a menial servant, and cook for him, and so many things. And Ishvara Puri was writing a book called Krishna Lilamrita, which is a reservoir of ecstatic love. And every night, Lord Chaitanya would come to hear Ishvara Puri recite from the book that he was writing. And all the devotees were there in Navadvip, so they were all overwhelmed with extreme jubilation to hear Ishvara Puri's pure heart glorifying Krishna. It's the most relishable subject matter when a pure devotee glorifies Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya was just enraptured, enchanted, mesmerized by Ishvara Puri's pure love of God. So, and then Ishvara Puri asked him to, because everyone knew Lord Chaitanya was a great scholar, we were discussing yesterday in class. He was such a scholar that it was mind-blowing. He could just like, he could defeat his own position that no one else could even touch. And then he could refute that. He could go back and forth, refuting until everyone was just shocked. Everyone knew that Lord Chaitanya was a great scholar. And Ishvara Puri said, please edit my book because I'm just pouring forth my expression of love of God, but there may be some grammatical errors. And for the public, it should be done nicely. So Lord Chaitanya said, who would be so bold as to dare edit your writings? The writings of a pure devotee are directly dictated by Krishna in the heart. And Prabhupada said that also in the 8th canto. He said, I'm not writing these books. Krishna's writing these books. They're actually dictated from within. Probably use the word dictated from within the heart. If you're very exalted, if you're totally pure in heart, then the Lord uses you as an instrument to the extent that he actually speaks to you. So Prabhupada could actually hear Krishna speaking and write Krishna's words down, such as the power. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami also did that. It's Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vrindavan Das Thakur did this with Chaitanya Bhagavat. He says there in that Lord Nityananda is directly dictating the book. So the power of the Shastra is that it's Krishna actually speaking through the mouth of pure devotees of the Lord. And Lord Chaitanya wanted everyone to know this. So he said, who would be so bold as to dare edit your words? Your words are perfect because they're coming from Krishna directly. So when Vasudev Dat made his request, Lord Chaitanya began crying in ecstasy because Vasudev was so pure. And then Lord Chaitanya said, oh dear devotees, please hear me. My body belongs to Vasudev Dat. He can sell me in any marketplace. If I'm sold, then I'm his slave. Because he was so pure, the Lord became totally captivated. He repeated it again and again. He wanted everyone to know, my body is the property of Vasudev Dat. And he began glorifying Vasudev Dat as if he had thousands of mouths. So Vasudev Dat requested that everyone's subtle body be entirely dissolved and they regain their spiritual body. And there's a purport there, it's Madhya chapter 15. It's a purport where Prabhupada quotes Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as saying that Vasudev Dat and Haridas Thakur are millions of times more advanced even than Lord Jesus Christ. The term, Prabhupada includes the term Lord, so we offer all respects to Jesus Christ. But still, analytically, what Vasudev Dat and Haridas Thakur were offering is even superior to what Jesus was offering, and reasons are given. The reasons Srila Bhakti Siddhanta gives is Jesus Christ only accepted sinful reactions of persons who surrendered to him. But Vasudev Dat is ready to take the sinful reactions of all living entities indiscriminately. They don't even have to know about it. They don't even have to want to go back to Godhead. He didn't ask them, my dear sir, do you feel like going back to Godhead? Because most people will say no. His heart was so overflowing with love that he just wanted everyone to go back to Godhead. And he was even ready to go to hell to equalize all the sinful reactions of everyone. And that would be many kalpas, a kalpa's 4 billion years. He would have had to suffer in hell for many kalpas to equal the sinful reactions of all living entities. And Lord Chaitanya said, because of your pure desire, I will send them all back to Godhead without you having to suffer. Simply because of your desire. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, the desire of a pure devotee is so strong, Krishna has to fulfill. Krishna is the servant of his pure devotee. So whenever the pure devotee desires something, Krishna has to fulfill that. Krishna is not independent. In fact, Krishna tells Durvasa Muni in the 9th canto, chapter 4, it's around text 68. Krishna, in the form of Narayan, says that I am not independent. I am controlled by the love of my pure devotees. Because, of course, we know the story that Durvasa Muni offended a pure devotee, Ambarish Maharaj. Everyone knows this story. And Ambarish Maharaj was so humble, he just was ready to be killed. Durvasa Muni was trying to kill him, actually, for a paltry. It wasn't even an actual offense. He drank some water before his guests because he had to break the Ekadasi fast. So Durvasa Muni basically was acting simply to punish. He had no justification for punishing Maharaj Ambarish. Actually, Durvasa Muni is a partial expansion of Lord Shiva, so we can view this as a deeper level. He knows very well not to offend pure devotees. So on the deeper level, he's demonstrating to us, he's taking the risky position of demonstrating to us the deleterious nature of offending pure devotees. So Ambarish Maharaj, actually the story goes like this. Ambarish Maharaj was fasting for a full year. He was such an exalted Vaishnava. He was a householder, but he was very exalted. Just like Priyavrata Maharaj. So he was fasting for a whole year to please Krishna. He was doing a super Ekadasi fast. And then, but after a year, the time came he had to break the fast. But just at that moment, Durvasa Muni appeared deliberately to make trouble for the king. And of course, you cannot eat before your guest, and especially when the guest is an exalted Brahmin sage with mystic powers. Durvasa Muni has tremendous power. So Maharaj Ambarish received him as a humble servant, being the kshatriya, the Brahmin is considered superior. So he received him and said, would you please accept a feast I will offer you? And Durvasa Muni said, yes, but I have to go to bathe in the river first. And noon, a Brahmin has to bathe and then chant Gayatri. So he went to the Yamuna and meditated on the impersonal Brahman. And then he came back, and he had deliberately arranged this. He knew the king was in difficulty. The king had to break fast by a certain time. So the king consulted Brahmins what to do. So drinking water can be considered fasting and not fasting, depending on circumstance. It would not violate the rules of etiquette for receiving a guest, but it would be considered breaking the fast because you have to break at a certain time. So he drank some water, and then he just waited with folded palms for Durvasa Muni to return. And Durvasa Muni returned, and by his mystic power he could tell, this is how powerful he was, simply by his mystical power he could tell the king had drank some water. And he got furious. He said, just see this man. He's not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. He thinks himself God. He transgresses religious principles by eating before he has fed his guest. And he's a kshatriya, and Brahmins are superior. So Durvasa Muni became enraged. On a deeper level, because Durvasa is actually so pure, he interacts with Srimati Radharani and Leelas in Vraj Dham. He gives her benedictions. So obviously, Durvasa Muni is a very great personality. He's not just an ordinary, foolish person making offense against a pure devotee. So this is all arranged, actually, to prove the greatness of Raj Ambarish. So he said, now I will punish you because you have violated the proper etiquette. I will now kill you. So he pulled out a hair from his head and threw it onto the ground and created a huge fiery demon. And all the other people in the court was in the court of the king. So the courtiers and ministers and everyone else was afraid. They were running away. But Maharaj Amrish was so pure and so off the bodily platform, didn't even identify with the physical body. A huge fiery demon was rushing out to kill him. And he was just happily meditating on Krishna. Just like Haridas Thakur, who was beaten in many marketplaces. And felt no pain whatsoever. Even though he was being violently beaten to death. It's incredible how exalted a pure devotee is. Way beyond the Ashtanga Yoga. We know in Ashtanga Yoga there are various limbs. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara. So when you reach Pratyahara, that stage in the Ashtanga system of yoga. Pratyahara means withdrawal of your consciousness from the senses of the body. So an advanced mystic, a non-devotional mystic, has the power to withdraw his consciousness from any part of his body. Even if you were sawing off his hand with a hacksaw, he wouldn't feel any pain. What to speak of a pure devotee is way beyond the Ashtanga yoga system. So Maharaj Amrish and Haridas Thakur, they were just completely cool. No one else can be really cool. Only a pure devotee in Krishna. The materialists, they pretend to be cool. But when they go to the doctor and the doctor says, I'm sorry, you have cancer, all the coolness goes out the window. Then they're screaming and crying, no, it's impossible, doctor, save me, do anything. That previous, like, cool, macho, you're bearing, you know, I'm so together, I have everything under control. It's all nonsense. It's so feeble. It can be swept away so easily. So devotees are more intelligent. They don't go for that nonsense. And when they become very advanced, they're actually in an exalted position. So much so that even if you're ready to be killed, they feel no anxiety. Pure devotees have no anxiety. There was a great devotee in ISKCON named Mother Hladini. Does everyone know the story of her? So Mother Hladini, she was preaching in Africa, and this crazy government in Libya took over, and they were about to kill all the devotees. They lined them up to shoot them to death, and she couldn't tolerate this, so she tried to physically stop them, and then she was also killed along with the devotees. But she was so off the bodily platform, it didn't matter. She just wanted to do her service. Bhakti Tirtha Swami said that Mother Hladini is the greatest secret in ISKCON. He wrote a book. There's a book on her. She was actually like Radhanath. She's a female counterpart of Radhanath Maharaj. Totally renounced, ate almost nothing, worked all day long, chanted so many rounds a day. Just an incredible personality. So even within ISKCON, there are great personalities have come. So Maharaj Amrish, he was just sitting there with folded hands. In ecstasy, he was absorbing himself in meditation on Krishna. A pure devotee is always in ecstasy, constantly. Nothing can change that. Even when it looks like the devotee is lamenting, it's actually in vipralamba, in ecstatic separation, it's still the highest ecstasy. And the proof is that Lord Chaitanya wanted to taste that mood. He tasted especially the mood of separation. So Maharaj Amrish, he said not a single word and just meditated on Krishna. But Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra. Actually, Krishna is Trikalagya. He sees the three phases of time. So before the whole incident began, the chakra was orbiting around the palace. It's described in the ninth canto. So as soon as this huge fiery demon was about to kill Maharaj Amrish, then the Sudarshan Chakra just came through and completely annihilated the demon. And then the chakra began chasing Durvasa Muni. And he went, by his mystic powers, he could go rapidly from one planet to the next. He went all over the universe, but he couldn't escape from the chakra. Then he came to Lord Brahma and said, please release me from this weapon. I'm about to be killed. And Lord Brahma said, I have no power. This is Krishna's personal weapon. You have offended a pure devotee of the Lord. So I can't help you, sorry. So then he went to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva said, I am powerless in the face of this weapon. You'll have to go to Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. And Durvasa Muni was so powerful, he could go out of the coverings of the universe and get to the gate of Vaikuntha. And there at the gate, he called out for the mercy of Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan appeared there and said, you have offended my pure devotee. I consider my pure devotees more dear than my own life. If you had offended me, I could forgive you, but the offense... To offend a pure devotee is so severe, it's such a great offense that I cannot forgive you. The only hope for your deliverance, otherwise you'll be burnt to ashes by the Sudarshan Chakra. The only hope for your deliverance is you have to go back to Maharaj Ambarish. So then he went all the way back to the earth planet and fell at the feet of Maharaj Ambarish. And the chakra was about to burn him. He was just begging for mercy. And an ordinary person, of course, would take great delight in revenge if someone tried to kill you, but then it's natural. But the king was so pure that he told the Sudarshan Chakra, please release this Brahmin. And then he said, I want to give all my pious merits to them, to this Brahmin, in addition to his being released from the Sudarshan Chakra. And he fasted for a whole year while Durvasmani was being chased all over the universe because he didn't want to eat before his guest had arrived. Such is the inconceivable qualities of pure devotees. So Durvasmani, when he heard this, he was crying and he was just overwhelmed by the purity of this person. How can someone be so pure? So he began glorifying the king and said, please take your meal. Actually, first then, again, Maharaj Ambarish fed Durvasa sumptuously, and then afterwards he himself finally took something to eat. Such is the quality of pure devotees. That's why Krishna is conquered by pure devotees, because they have no false ego, they have no vengeful spirit, they have no animosity towards others, they have no animosity even towards persons who tried to harm them. Also with Haridas Thakur, when he is being beaten in 22 marketplaces, the beating is so severe that after 2 marketplaces a normal person would have died. That's described in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Haridas Thakur was just chanting in ecstasy and felt no pain whatsoever. And the guards their mind was completely blown after about 7 or 8, 9, 10 marketplaces. This person is simply smiling in ecstasy. Everyone else is screaming and dying. And this person, he must be some great saint. He's not even affected. And he would smile at his tormentors. And then, but during the course of the beatings, the Lord, again, cannot tolerate offenses to pure devotees, so he sent his Sudarshan Chakra, it's also described, Chaitanya Bhagavat, he sent the chakra to annihilate the persons who were beating Haridas Thakur. And when Haridas, by his magical powers, he could see the chakra coming. So he prayed to the chakra, oh, chakra, please, do not kill these persons. Don't know what they're doing. They're actually just ignorant, but they don't deserve to be harmed. Please, please save them, and give them ecstatic love of God. Give them pure devotional service. Don't make them suffer. That was his only concern. He wasn't concerned for himself. He was concerned for them. The Christians think they have a monopoly on this kind of consciousness, not realizing that there are many pure devotees throughout history, as I mentioned a bunch of them in the class. Unfortunately, the Christians are not very broad-minded. They think that they alone have the true path, and they alone have great saintly persons with compassion, not realizing that when you're a pure devotee, your heart naturally feels this kind of love. So the Lord, he wanted to annihilate them, but later on he told Haridas Thakur, by the power of your prayer, my chakra, which is the ultimate weapon, became powerless. Because you saw them as good persons, I was powerless to punish them, although I wanted to kill them because of their offenses. Simply by your purity, by chakra, which can annihilate universes, as we saw from the previous pastime, my chakra became powerless, but I couldn't tolerate that you were being beaten, so I took the beating on my own body. I interposed my transcendental form invisibly between you and them. And then the Lord turned around and pulled up his shirt and showed his back to Haridas Thakur, and Haridas saw that the Lord had taken the beating on his own transcendental body. And Haridas fainted in ecstasy, thinking how wonderful the Lord is, how kind the Lord is, how much he cares so much about his pure devotees. So this is the wonderful nature of pure devotional service, that the devotees actually conquer the Lord. They control the Lord. Therefore, the Lord wants to come as a devotee. In Adi Lila chapter 4 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is entitled The Confidential Reasons for the Appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chapter 3 of Adi Lila is the external reason to propagate the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. But that can be done by anyone and is done by anyone in 999 out of 1,000 Kali Yugas in the day of Brahma. Each day of Brahma is 1,000 Kali Yugas. In 999 of them, Lord Lord Krishna does not personally come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. A great devotee leads the Sankirtan mission. This is described in Adi Lila chapter 3. Only in one. So how fortunate we are. Out of 4.32 billion years, the day of Brahma, 14 manvantaras, and 1,000 Divya-Yuga cycles, we just happen to be in the Kali Yuga where Krishna himself is giving out ecstatic love of God in the mood of Braj Dham. So we are extremely fortunate. We're actually getting something that's very, very rare. The Acharyas inform us in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat. The great Acharyas inform us how we are getting something which is inconceivably rare and valuable. 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya was on this planet. You can actually go and see his pastimes. Compared to billions of years, that's a microsecond on the geological time scale. It just happened, basically. As far as the demigods are concerned, it happened yesterday. So we are so fortunate that we have Lord Chaitanya's blessings and Lord Chaitanya's method of Sankirtan to purify our hearts. Everything is in place. All we have to do is absorb ourselves fully in this mission of spreading Krishna consciousness and our personal sadhana of hearing and chanting. So Lord Chaitanya, he was so captivated by the qualities of all these pure devotees, Vasudeva, Haridas Thakur, and all the other devotees there in Navadvip, that he grew up in Navadvip, of course, but then moved to Jagannath Puri later on. So Adi Lila chapter 3 describes that only in one out of 1,000 Kali Yugas do we actually see Lord Krishna coming in the guise of a devotee. And the reason why is given in Adi Lila chapter 4. In Goloka Vrindavan, the Lord is enjoying very intimate, sweet, loving exchanges. And he's noticing how his devotees are overwhelmed with ecstasy, and the devotees are actually experiencing more pleasure than he experiences. So because he's Rasaraj, Rasa means loving relationships and Raj means king. So Rasaraj is the name of Krishna. He who is the ultimate connoisseur of loving relationships. So Krishna, he begins thinking, wait a minute, I'm God, but I'm not enjoying as much as the devotees. I want to become a devotee. I want to join the Hare Krishna movement. That's this guy in Adi Lila chapter 4. I want to actually experience the nectar that these devotees are experiencing. And what's actually given is a quantitative number. The number is that the pure devotees, especially the gopis, because the gopis are the most advanced of all, the pure devotees are experiencing 10 million times more pleasure than Krishna. 10 million times more pleasure. So when Lord Krishna sees this, he sees how much his pure devotees are enjoying because they're having pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. He's dancing with the gopis and they're actually experiencing more happiness than he is. So he thinks, wait a minute, I'm being cheated. Being the supreme is not the best position. Being a devotee is even superior. This is very confidential. No other religion has the conception that being the servant of God is better than being God. Many religions, so-called religions, the goal is to become God. In one lecture, Prabhupada said, these Mayavadis are not very ambitious. They just want to become equal to God. The pure devotees are far superior to God. Because they're ignorant, they don't know that there's something way superior. Prabhupada was making a joke out of it. He said that these Mayavadis are not very ambitious. They just want to be God. Pure devotees become the controller of God. They actually become completely controlled by God. And that's also described in Madhula chapter 13. Krishna is speaking. Krishna as Lord Chaitanya is speaking to Lord Jagannath. Jagannath is Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna himself, and Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya as Radharani is speaking to Lord Jagannath. This is the internal meaning of Rath Yatra. We all know there's internal and external. The internal meaning of Rath Yatra is that the gopis have a desperately intense longing to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. Jagannath Puri is Aishwarya Dham, and Gundicha is Madhurya Dham. The Gundicha temple is where Lord Jagannath goes at the end of the Rath Yatra. It's a 2-mile parade route from Jagannath Puri north to Gundicha. So So the gopis are wanting to bring Krishna back. They have an intense longing to bring Krishna back. So Lord Chaitanya is in the mood of the gopis and he's praying. The gopis are not like mystic yogis. They will never be satisfied simply by meditating on your lotus feet and imitating so-called yogis. Teaching the gopis about meditation is another kind of duplicity. When the gopis are instructed to undergo mystic yoga practice, they are not at all satisfied. On the contrary, they become more angry with you. When the gopis are feeling intense longing for Krishna, Krishna just either sends Uddhava or he sends a letter. And he says, I'm all pervading, I exist everywhere, just meditate on it. They're already so absorbed they can't think of anything but Krishna. And it's like a joke. Krishna's saying, well, just meditate on me. They're already totally absorbed in meditating on him. So it's like a joke in bad taste. The gopis say, I would like to withdraw my consciousness from you and engage it in material activities. I would like to withdraw my consciousness from you and engage it in material activities, but even though I try, I cannot do so. We're struggling to absorb our materially conditioned mind in spiritual activities. The gopis are so exalted, they have to, when they're feeling such intense pangs of separation from their spiritual absorption, then they're thinking, well, better we just think about something material, because Krishna's just, it's too intense, the separation. I would like to withdraw my consciousness from you and engage it in material activities, but even though I try, I cannot do so. I am naturally inclined to you only. Your instructions for me to meditate on you are therefore simply ludicrous. In this way you are killing me. This is Srimati Radharani herself speaking. In this way you are killing me. It is not very good for you to think of me as a candidate for your instructions. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anya Vilashita Shunyam Jnana karma janavitam anakulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktiruttama. For a pure devotee, there is no scope for indulgence in mystic yoga practice or the cultivation of speculative philosophy. It is indeed impossible for a pure devotee to engage his mind in such unwanted activities. Even if a pure devotee wanted to, his mind would not allow him to do so. When, during the course of sadhana bhakti, we finally reach that wonderful day that we have entirely dissolved our material mind and proportionately regained our spiritual mind. The living entity always has some kind of mind. He's never mindless. Either you have a spiritual mind or a material mind. So during the grand enterprise of sadhana bhakti, as the years go by, when we finally succeed in dissolving our material mind and have fully regained our pure spiritual mind, and the function of the spiritual mind, you cannot think of anything but Krishna. Then we'll be in such absorption in Krishna consciousness, even if we want to, we certainly would never want to go back after having rotting in this material world and struggling and suffering. So, but even if you wanted somehow or other, you couldn't. Imagine that day when your mind cannot think of anything but Krishna. Effortlessly and spontaneously, you're absorbed in thinking of Krishna. This is, the Shastras reveal, this is the status of pure devotees. And among all pure devotees, the gopis are the greatest. I do not care for my personal unhappiness. This is Srimati Radharani speaking. But when I see the morose face of your mother Yashoda and the hearts of all the inhabitants of Vrindavan breaking because of you, I wonder whether you want to kill them all. Is it that you want to enliven them by coming there? Why is it you are simply keeping them alive in a state of suffering? Externally, to materialists, this intense pangs of separation appear like suffering, but they're actually the greatest pleasure. So much so that, of course, that's why Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya to taste this mood. So, Srimati Radharani is feeling that Krishna's absence is breaking the heart of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and all the pure devotees there. And that is the case. But in the deeper level, they're experiencing the highest transcendental ecstasy. The inhabitants of Vrindavan do not want you dressed like a prince, nor do they want you to associate with great warriors in a different country. When Krishna went to Dwarka, they cannot leave the land of Vrindavan, and without your presence, they are all dying. What is their condition to be? My dear Krishna, you are the life and soul of Vrindavan Dham. You are especially the life of Nanda Maharaj. You are the only opulence in the land of Vrindavan, and you are very merciful. Please come and let them all live. Kindly keep your lotus feet again in Vrindavan. Purport, Srimati Radharani did not express her personal unhappiness at being separated from Krishna. She wanted to evoke Krishna's feelings for the conditions of all others in Vrindavan Dham. Mother Yashoda, Maharaj Nanda, the coward boys, gopis, birds, bees on the banks of the Yamuna, the water of the Yamuna, the cheese, forests, and all other paraphernalia associated with Krishna before he left Vrindavan for Mathura. In Vaikuntha, there's no inanimate matter. I think everyone knows this. There's nothing inanimate. Like here we have something called wood or stone or metal that is insentient or inanimate, not alive. But in the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, what to speak of Goloka, which is even higher, everything is conscious. The water, the trees, the grass, the birds and the bees, not only are they conscious, but their pure devotees absorb in the ecstasy of love of God. So all of them, even the bees, the birds, the trees, the acharyas say that the birds are great rasika Vaishnavas, the birds of Vrindavan. They sit there just listening to Krishna's flute song, and when it stops, when Krishna goes to do something else, they just chant Krishna, 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 Krishna with tears rolling down their beaks. The tears are just falling to the Chintamani dust of Rajdham. So the birds, whenever Krishna's flute song is available, they're absorbed in that. And when there's no flute song, because sometimes Krishna has to do other things, like wrestle with the cowherd boys, or take prasadam that Mother Yashoda has sent. So when the flute song stops, they go internally. They're the greatest of mystics. Pure devotees are far superior to ordinary mystics. So they can effortlessly focus their mind on one point indefinitely. Like if we try to concentrate our mind, we know it's very hard to keep. The material mind is chanchala. That means flickering. Arjuna tells Krishna, chanchala hi mana Krishna. It seems insurmountable, this unsteady mind. But as you get purified, the mind becomes more steady. And when you're totally pure, you can fix your mind one-pointedly on one lila of Krishna and be absorbed in that for eternity. Of course, they are variegated lilas, but you have that power, and each lila is so attractive that you just want to be absorbed. Like, so the birds, they're just sitting on the branch of the tree, it's described in the 10th canto, that they become totally absorbed just in thinking about Krishna. And when the flute song stops, they just chant, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And they're just absorbed like that, constantly, for hours, all night long when Krishna's not with them. And then the day when he comes out again to herd the cows and play the flute, then the birds wake up. The whole forest of Vrindavan goes into an internal state in great separation. The gopis become alive because they can be with Krishna at night. The coward boys and everybody else suffers when Krishna goes away, transcendentally. But then they go internally and they just absorb themselves in meditating on their lilas. So they're never actually separated from Krishna, is described by the acharyas. Because the intense meditation on Krishna makes Krishna actually present within their heart. And that's just as real as Krishna outside. On the highest stage of realization, experiencing Krishna internally and experiencing Krishna externally is identical. Prabhupada explains this in chapters 46 and 47 of Krishna book, that Krishna actually never leaves Vrindavan. Even though he looks like he leaves, he's always there in his bhava manifestation. Bhava means ecstatic love, as opposed to bhava. Yahara prasade bhava. Bhava. Bhava means material existence, but bhava means ecstatic love of God. That's why you have to be careful with the longs and shorts. It entirely changes the meaning of the word. As we sang this morning in Guru Puja, Yahara prasade bhava bhava. But sometimes what is saying bhava, that ruins the actual meaning that the author of the song Narottam Das Thakur is trying to convey. So the birds and all the living entities, they have Krishna always accessible. The pure devotees always have Krishna. They conquer Krishna. They make Krishna captive in their heart. That's what it means to be a pure devotee. You capture Krishna in the core of your heart. So I got a little carried away. Are there any questions, comments, or chastisements?
Two definitions of bhava. There's bhava and bhava. Can you explain bhava?
Yeah, bhava, the English word being, and in Russian also there's budit, right? So all the Indo-European language, that the B word means being, existence. So when we sing Yahara Prasade Bhai, Bhai means O brothers. O my brothers. By the prasad, by the mercy of the spiritual, Turiyai means to cross. A means this. A bhava. Bhava means the place where things come into existence and go out of existence. So that's bhava. Beingness.
In Russian, there is word love. It's Lyubov, bhava.
Yes.
Like Lyubov, love. So it's
Russian is much closer to Sanskrit. Mm. It's so close. In fact, Chaturvidhar, Chitirivid, it's practically the same. But English is a more barbaric language. The further you get from India, the more the linguistic evolution changes the languages away. But even a barbaric language so far away still has some remnants. Like in Sanskrit, you say smita. In English, you say smile. It's very close, smita and smile. Or tat in Sanskrit and that. That's almost the same, tat and that. Or in Sanskrit, there's vira. In English, virile, virility, and virus. Anything with, it means powerful, basically. Virile or virility or virulence. Those English words come from the Sanskrit vira, which means hero, heroic. Same in Latin, same word in Latin, vira means heroic. So bhava means that place where things come into being and go out of being. In other words, the material world. So Yahar started by a bhava toriya means we cross over this place where things die, get old and sick and die. That's bhava. But bhava means ecstatic love of God. That's what Lord Chaitanya and his associates. And Mahabhava is reserved for Srimati Radharani and her associates. That's the greatest, Mahabhava.
Thank you for mentioning in the spiritual world that things are animate.
Everything is animate.
It's such a wonderful meditation.
Now here's another Fara thing. The Christians say animals have no soul. The word animal means that which has a soul. Because anima means soul in Latin. The word anima... Anima, anyone who studied Latin when they were young. So an English word animation, animate means to bring life to be enlivened, animate, animation. The English word animal means that which possesses a soul. Can you believe it? I always, whenever the Christians pull out a nonsense philosophy, I try to enlighten them by this linguistic analysis. And Catholics, the language of Catholicism was Latin. That was the language, was Latin. And Latin, the very Latin word, animal, means that which is, I mean, the English word animal comes from that which has a soul.
At the start of your class, you mentioned about Vanashram Dham, and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, how it excels that need to go through. Actually, I read it in the introduction of the Bhagavatam, how it actually exceeds that. Can you share a little more? I'm still, because we do actually follow that in some sense it's necessary.
Yes, this is a tricky point. How much Varnashram do we need?
Yeah, sure.
So if you read Mahabharata or Ramayana, everyone did their duties very, very strictly.
Yeah.
That's where the classical Varnashram system is clearly delineated, Mahabharata and Ramayana.
Mm-hmm.
So when Vishvamitra Muni came to the court of Dasarath Maharaj,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Dasarath was so powerful, he was the father of God. His son was Ramchandra. But when the Muni came, Vishvamitra Muni, a great Brahmin,
mm-hmm.
Dasarath Maharaj got down from his throne, worshipped him, put him up on the throne, washed his feet, and said, I will do anything you request, I am your servant. So the king, in other words, this is a classical Varnashram system. You have to follow all the rules. And then Vishwamitra Muni said, give me your son, Ram.
Mm-hmm.
Dasha said, said, "You're asking for my very life." He was so attached. If he couldn't see Ram for 1 minute, he would feel tremendous anxiety as a pure devotee. And Vishwamitra said, "I must go to kill some rakshasas who are disturbing his sacrifice in the forest." And these are mystical beings, almost on the level of demigods, but very malevolent, very nasty. They would chew up sages for fun. They would tear the sages limb from limb and drink their blood. This guy in Ramayana. So Vishwamitra Muni, he came to the court of Dasarath Maharaj to beg for his son Ram. And Ram was only 16 years old. And Dasarath says, he doesn't know yet the mystical weapons to counteract these rakshasas. So I refuse to let him come. I will come myself. And Vishwamitra Muni was about to curse him because you have promised me and then you're not allowing him. Then Vasishtha Muni, who was his family priest, he whispered in the ear of Dasarath, said, "Your son is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He cannot be killed." Because Dasarath Maharaj was mortified thinking that the young Ram would be killed by rakshasas in combat. So Dasarath Maharaj was dazed, just like Nanda Maharaj. He couldn't compute that his son was God, that he had to accept the great rulings of Brahmins. So if you study Ramayana and Mahabharata, you'll see that the classical Varnashram system is a multi-lifetime enterprise for self-realization. You have to follow. If you do all your duties properly as a sudra for many lifetimes, you can take birth as a Vaishya, then many lifetimes, kshatriya, and all, then as a Brahmin. But as a Brahmin, you may get snagged into being proud. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when describing the mode of goodness, in the 18th chapter, you're conditioned by a sense of superiority, become puffed up in simple terms. And then you have to do many lifetimes of Brahmani before you finally take to pure devotional service. So it may take millions of lifetimes in the classical Varnashram system. But Lord Chaitanya is so powerful that if you surrender fully, like you chant 16 rounds a day, follow the four regular principles, and work all day for Prabhupada's mission, in one lifetime you can become a pure devotee and go back to Godhead. So to answer the question, for us, there's no need for Varnashram at all. But for persons who are not fully surrendered, they don't want to yet fully take to Krishna consciousness, they have to. Otherwise, they're incurring sinful reactions.
Still, we need to understand the etiquettes and the process of how it works, because otherwise you can offend.
Yes.
Right, you can offend others. So we need to understand this. There's final.
Yes. It depends on you how much you're ready to surrender to Lord Chaitanya's program.
Yeah.
If you fully surrender, then you don't need Varnashram Dharma. You actually transcend it. In the 11th canto, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, in the Uddhava Gita, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Krishna says to Uddhava, one of the best spiritual practices is to go out on the common road, and whenever you see a dog or a donkey, offer dandavat obeisance. If you're that humble, you're asking how to deal with everyone, there's one simple formula. Everyone is superior to me. That's the vision of the Mahabharata, the Uttamadhikari. He sees everyone as superior. And this is the way to get, what does Lord Chaitanya say? How does Lord Chaitanya say to get enough taste so you can always chant? Trinadapi sanitena toryavasahishana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. So Lord Chaitanya says, if you want to have so much taste that you can't stop chanting, that you're intoxicated with the Hare Krishna mantra day and night, overwhelmed with ecstasy, the very simple rule is just be ultra humble with everybody. Instead of analysis, we can go through long, we can develop paralysis through analysis.
Okay.
Paralysis through analysis. No, it's okay for people who like to analyze. See, there's different paths.
Yeah.
There are jnanis who love to analyze, and they should study Varnashram and all that. And there are even devotees who are mixed karma mishra or jnana mishra bhaktas who should study Bhagavad Gita and Varnashram and all that those stuff. And then there's Lord Gauranga's mad lovers of God. The rocket ship process. If you want to become a mad lover of God, which Lord Chaitanya actually is inviting us, so we have to study the books very carefully to understand the different levels and what we can actually get, what we're eligible to receive as the highest benediction. No, it's okay. Thanks.
Out.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We're actually eligible to receive something far superior. And again, Majjhada chapter 8, conversation with Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, in which they start with Vanashram, and Lord Chaitanya says, please move forward. I want to hear something more. It's deliberately designed like that. Majjhada chapter 8. We have to study Prabhupada's books to see everything in the right perspective.
Yeah.
It's very, it makes life very simple. Everyone is superior to me and I should offer respects to everyone, even non-devotees, even subhuman species. Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, I have to check to make sure I got my memory. What I recall Krishna saying is, I do not see a superior process to the process of going out into the street and offering dhanam and obeisance to every ass and every dog on the street. In other words, with that one simple action, you dissolve your false ego. False ego means I'm better. At least I'm something. I'm something special. I'm something better. There's something good. Everyone should notice me. Everyone has to say something. You know, that's garbage, nonsense, idiocy we've all been addicted to for many lifetimes. So Lord Chaitanya's program is to dissolve that. And the most intelligent person says, if in one stroke I can finish material existence, why should I gumshoe around and horse around in material existence? Everyone. If on book distribution you know, you think everyone is superior, the karmis will all of a sudden become very attracted to you. If you actually manifest the qualities of pure devotion, you can switch into the uttamadhikari vision where everyone is superior. If someone asks you for actual practical instructions, you have to come down to Majjhima platform. You know, Prabhupada explained this. In order to practically engage people who don't know what they should be doing, like as you're saying, the Indians don't—they don't have enough discrimination to recognize that mundane charity is nothing compared to Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. So, but if you're just distributing books and you don't need to function as a Majjhima, if you function as Uttama Adhikar, you feel ecstasy all day long. Try it; you just feel so overwhelmed with happiness, thinking everyone is superior to you. It takes some practice because we're accustomed to the opposite. Our mind, the material mind, is a self-glorification machine on the subtle platform. The mind is a material element, Lord Kapila explains in third canon. So what does it do? The business of the mind is always to puff you up, say, oh, I'm so much better than everybody else. I lead such a good kirtan. I give such a good class. I'm such a good devotee. I distribute so many. You know, it's just gone endless garbage, nonstop 20, even when you're sleeping, it won't let you, it won't release you. So to cut that to the root, therefore Lord Chaitanya gives the Chanadapi formula. And you have to practice in the beginning. But the more you do it, the more you get a taste and you feel ecstatic. This is really wonderful consciousness. Sadhana bhakti means cultivation. You can't relax, otherwise the mind slips into its old patterns. When you're purified, as we were describing, then you won't have to struggle anymore with the mind because the mind will have been transformed into a spiritual mind. But if it has not yet, and you can obviously tell where it is at by a little bit of introspection. Mm-hmm. We should have to, Prabhupada said, we have to be very introspective, constantly notice where the mind is at. So if we're not fully purified, then we have to push and force the mind to think the proper thoughts. Discipline, austerity, pushing and forcing is required in the neophyte stage. But very quickly, because Lord Chaitanya is an ocean of mercy, when he sees you making the attempt, he rewards you with ecstatic feelings. Then you want to be humble, you like to surrender, be humble.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So before we forget, because